February 24, 1981, California State University at Long Beach. Richard Wilde, interviewed by Kay Brigo.
I've been a candidate for Associate Dean.
Yeah, I think she'd been a candidate for Fiscal Associate Dean. And I appointed Bill Resch for the job rather than her, and she was, I know, pretty bitterly disappointed. So I looked about for some things that she might do, maybe get some administrative experience, and gave her a parcel of assigned time and an office on the second floor and some things, special projects to do. When the associate vice president thing came open, why, she was a candidate eagerly for him, and I strongly supported her for it. And she got the job. She inherited this strange bastard. I warned her what kind of a job it was and how it had been created. But she very much wanted to get an administration, and she thought she could somehow make a go of it. And so she became the first associate vice president parallel to the one for personnel. So now they had two of them. And she was in that position during the 2 years when I was acting dean of letters, when the school letters existed and was broken up. Now, in this whole story of the school, I haven't said much about the confrontation with students in the the Vietnam era and all the rest of it. The Robertson Steele thing, I don't know, did we say enough about that?
Yeah.
At an earlier point?
Yeah.
Well, that obviously was a major occupation the last year that Hayden was dean. And it was at that time, I think I maybe said this before, that I'd begun working. I've used these mechanisms that I talked about, the little reserve and the idea that you could form cooperative programs with various faculty who would put part of their time, for which they'd be compensated, into a pool, and that would then create a... I thought, well, make Asian studies and other things like that. Why can't we proceed that way with ethnic studies? And secondarily, there will be faculty in various departments that will create courses which can be made into an interdisciplinary program, just like history courses were part of Asian studies and anthropology courses were, and so on. It was using that same model as an approach to the ethnic studies situation. Of course, that wasn't going to satisfy ethnic studies. The black studies, black student movement particularly was saying they wanted, in fact, to be a separate and parallel university existing on this campus, but not responsible to anybody except maybe the president alone, and not necessarily having to deal with all the jazz of bureaucracy that everybody else had to deal with. They'd have their own program, and they would be autonomous. As they said, they want autonomy on campus, and they want a department. So even though we made some progress on a curriculum, and we identified faculty, and people were beginning to put together ethnic studies courses, this was probably not going to be able to withstand the forces of the time. Now, many universities did stand with that. They may have made a few appointments for ethnic studies coordinators and even a few faculty that did nothing but ethnic studies courses, but they held out and never created departments. And they held out for interdisciplinary programs. But on this campus, the Black Student Union apparently overwhelmed McIntosh, because eventually he made a commitment to them in one of these confrontation meetings that he would support a department of ethnic black studies. And once he made that commitment, he then announced it to the School of Letters and Science and shipped the thing down to us and said, there will be a Black Studies department in the School of Letters and Sciences. So we then had all the personnel problems and all the budget problems and all the curriculum problems that went with that business, and were caught in the middle of that thing pretty straightforwardly. I wrote a paper on the Mexican-American Studies Department and how they were born, and I should share that with you.
Yes.
I meant to bring it. And I think it's at home.
Okay.
But I'll bring it. And after reading that, perhaps I'll read it again, and then that will certainly refresh my memory. But basically, the Chicanos, of course, came forward and said, if Black Studies can be a department, we can be a department. And just, you know, on the surface of it, it seemed that there was more of an argument in some ways for a separate program for them with the language and so on in their home than there was immediately about Black Studies. So it was hard to resist that kind of a situation. And indeed, I said, well, we've sold the four now, departments or not departments. And on programs that are going to be separate and not simply be borrowing faculty from other departments and with courses and faculty drawn as in a Asian studies program, that the Ford's been sold on that one, or maybe we could never have held it. So the Chicanos people, rather than being in confrontation with our office, more or less worked with us. We said, well, all right, this is the way to do it, and go out and do this and do that. If you do these things, well, then we'll respond in the following ways. So that I'm sure the Chicano people looked upon me as a facilitator rather than as an enemy, which wasn't true of the Black Studies people, who really never saw me as a facilitator because I was part of the confrontation with them. And the same is true of the Asian program and the Indian program, which we simply facilitated into existence. I did encourage them not to work for degrees, to keep standard degrees and to work with certificates so that you'd be a major in business or a major in history or a major in whatever you wanted to be, and then you'd have a certificate in Black Studies or a certificate in Chicano Studies, because I thought that that was more marketable, and I still do. So I drugged my feet mightily on degree programs, but we eventually had at least a degree program in Black and Chicano Studies. Never did get one in Asian Studies or Indian Studies, and probably never will. And we tried to keep the curriculum somewhat reasonable. We got into tremendous confrontations on appointments, because they wanted to appoint students to faculty positions and people that had no academic training. Jack Ahmed, I'm sure, was Jack Ahmed, I'm sure, was hurried to his grave in a sense by the harassments of all this. It was a terrible experience for him. Hyde, in many ways, was in a unique position. He was a Southerner, and he's the only person that worked with Black people, in any way. Perhaps not in the relationship they now wanted, but at least. I remember him laughing at a course proposed in Soul Food. He said, yeah, that's Southern cooking. those were some pretty sharp times. I think I went over that, though, didn't I?
Yeah. What happened when the School of Letters finally was dissolved into two parts?
Well, I know a little less about that than I might, because my position was that once they decided to have schools and they appointed deans and so on, I think they did that before the semester was out, so we had a kind of an overlap when I was letters and these people had been nominated, at least the people knew who they were. My position was that at that point in time, a lot would go on by way of negotiation between departments and programs and the new schools that were being formed. It wasn't so much of an assignment out as it was a relationship that would be developed on a positive basis with a new mechanism that would be created. And I by that time, Donna was resigned as associate vice president or whatever happened. I'm not sure I know that whole story. And the committee that was searching for a replacement came to me and asked me if I'd be interested in running. Well, I'd really more or less decided to give up administration. I'm fed up on it. I was a long time deciding what I should do at that point in time. And I said, well, on the assumption that's a one-year appointment, that you're going to be looking for someone permanently, that I'm phasing out administration, as long as that's understood, that I can teach a course and begin to get back into the classroom, I'll let my name go in to the hopper. I think John Walzer was the head of the committee. I think he was. Anyway, it was under those circumstances that I stood and was persuaded to continue for a year, whether wisely or not, I don't know.
Can I ask you just a little something about how the schools were formed? You said it was a process of negotiation. Is that why...
You mean letters?
No, as they broke up.
Oh.
As the school broke up.
Well, we had various plans which showed these departments would be grouped in this way. And there were committees that were involved in drafting various documents. And departments were shown that this is where you're tentatively scheduled to be by a committee which makes the following suggestion. What's your reaction to it? But I think that's how a lot of the grouping went on. But departments were somewhat free to say, I don't like that, and to try to negotiate themselves into a different position. There were departments that didn't know which way to go, like mathematics, for example, which some people said, let's go with the science where we were originally. Some people said, let's go with engineering, where many departments are. Others said, we're humanities. Others said, we ain't either, so... How do we choose? They finally ended up in humanities. Because they weren't a social science, I guess. That's the only reason. Couldn't think of themselves as a social science.
Yeah, I sort of wonder about the history department also.
Oh.
Because I think of myself as neither a social nor a behavioral scientist.
Well, that was one of the arguments against breaking everything up, that there were departments that didn't know where they wanted to be. Like psychology didn't know where to be science or so on, or where should math go. What about history and so on? No, these questions have arisen. I think there was an assumption all along that history was part of the social sciences. We were really going back to the old divisions, going back where we started from. Certainly in the central administration. There were votes in some departments as to which way to go. I don't know if we required everybody to do that. I think it was obvious where some of them would be, and others voted. I don't know if history voted or not. I think they may have voted to go social science. It's true. I think history can be looked upon either way. It's one of the arguments, of course, for not breaking things up all the time. It didn't carry any weight, though. But I think history must have made the choice. I don't think they were assigned. I think there was a presupposition in going to social science. They might have had a fight if they had chosen to go to humanities. But it didn't really come to that. At least I don't remember it ever came to that. Anything else?
Yeah, okay. You're acting associate vice president for academic affairs?
Yeah.
And you stayed in that position a year?
In a year.
And that was under David Adamant?
Right.
What was it like working under him?
Well, David was a bit aloof, and I think he'd been used to administering a large bureaucratic establishment, the finance department of the state of Wisconsin, you know. And in a little bit, he ran the thing that way. His secretary was kind of the focal point. Oh, a lot of correspondents would come in, and then he'd send out little white slips. You know, do this, do that, do this, do that, do this. Now, I ignored half the slips because I was very slow in acting. I'm sure he must have thought I was a terrible bum, but a lot of the things I just couldn't. I mean, I'd been around a long time. I said, oh, what the hell? This is the main significance. We'll put it in the circular file where it belongs. Well, he wanted a response saying, put it in the circular file on a piece of paper with a copy. So it was a little bit of that. He was pleasant enough, but we really spent very little time talking together and very little time working together. I was in one office and he was in another office, and there was this secretarial coordinating mechanism. Our relationships were in some ways kind of formal, which I was surprised about. Because when I was dean, my associate deans, when I wanted to talk with them, I walked down the hall. I don't think he ever walked down to my office to talk to me about anything. There was only one way to go, and that was for me to go to his office. I'm not stuffy about these things, and I really didn't bother me particularly much, but he was really, really quite formal. And maybe it was necessary. I mean, he was one thing about him, he's an extremely able man. I have never seen a man whose mind I have seen as sharp as his. I think he's one of the sharpest people I've ever known. I've met a lot of people in the world. I think he's a very, very, you know, very bright person. A workaholic. And he expected other people to be. If you weren't, you'd be poofed, I think. I'm not a workaholic. Quite, I don't think. I wasn't by that time. I was very relaxed in that job. I had decided I was going to get out of administration, so I was very. And I was supposed to be doing GE. Well, some of the things that Don had started, I didn't really think were a good idea, so I didn't want to necessarily continue with those things. I had some other ideas, and at a very early point I recommended them to David, but he wasn't interested really in working in curriculum matters. He was interested in personnel and improving the stature of the faculty and getting more research and getting the budget marching and getting a budget process working. It was a fiscal and personnel interest, only secondarily a curriculum interest. So I was kind of, you know, fifth wheel on the wagon, I felt very much throughout the year, because this wasn't the area in which he was putting his energy. Now, when you're an acting associate vice president, as Donna was and I was, I'm sure she'd tell you this too, your leverage is small. Donna tried to work closely with the president and use his muscle. And that was, you know, it's in some ways an intelligent way to go. I could never figure out what the hell the president wanted in GE. And I really never could figure out how, short of the use of main force, you could make the schools and departments do anything reasonable in GE reform, anyhow. And I didn't think he could do it by sweet persuasion. I tried sweet persuasion. I came up with various programs, and we even had some meetings with some deans to engage in some sweet persuasion. And nothing happened, and nothing was going to happen. There's only one way you could make people change, and that's to say if they didn't change, they wouldn't get a budget. They'd lose umpteen bucks. And there's only one person that could do that, and that was somebody that didn't have an acting appointment, and that person was well in command of the budget. That was David Adamany. You notice that he shed Tyndall's office, he shed several other offices that existed down there, got rid of a lot of programs, centralized a lot of things in his office, and he was very much in command. He had all the power. He had the power in personnel, he had the power in budget, and the president delegated to him. He could have changed, he could have done GE as he eventually did it by calling him in and said, deans, you will ram the following things through your various schools, by Jove, and so on. So, but I I never felt I had that kind of power as an acting person, and I really had. Eventually, I did stand to be permanent associate vice president, but not with much conviction. And ultimately, the committee didn't recommend me, so conviction or not, it wouldn't have mattered. But I don't think David wanted me to stay. I think he indicated he didn't want me in the position. So, with neither his support or the committee's, well, that was the end of that. Anyway, I wasn't all that, I was a bit miffed that I hadn't been nominated and maybe then turned it down myself, as I probably had half a mind to do. You know, your pride gets involved. But except for that, I was really kind of coasting out. And I probably didn't do as much as I should have done. We did carry on with a few things. In GE, we did get a few useful things done. Got a 5-year calendar. Got the spring and fall semesters balanced so they have roughly the same number of days. Got our holidays shifted around so that Monday classes aren't penalized as much as they used to be, and did a few minor things like that. Did the academic master plan. Cope with some of the problems Adam and he created, like taking the guy who was a health programs coordinator out of his job, casting him down in Tom Dean's shed. Taking him from a major coordinator at the college level to a single faculty member program, and that poor man really couldn't cope with this demotion, and he was in my office all the time. Coped with some of the personnel problems in areas like and some of the budgetary problems in areas like audiovisual, where there were considerable problems. So, you know, I did some of those specific things. But in some ways, part of the thing you do in administration is you cope with every problem that arises. The other thing you can do is take some positive lead in some direction. I really didn't have a commanding notion of where to take the university or the there was any practical way. I could think of some things that I'd like to do, but there was no practical way to do them. I never did anything about trying to coordinate the liberal arts, which I should have, I suppose, since I made a big point that that was an important thing to do. Oh, well, we did have a couple of meetings. We did try to salvage the honors program. Larry Berner wanted to redo the curriculum, and instead of making it kind of a loose elective kind of experimental course program, which it had become, to turn it into a tightly structured general education program, the only tightly structured one we had, which would be like you would be put into willy-nilly into a small liberal arts college. I mean, they tend to have a very fixed program and a limited number of courses. Well, who's going to do that with it? And even though they're animating, a lot of people looked at it skeptically in the sense that it hadn't done too well budgetarily. Why we rescued it and put it on that tack. Now I understand it's on a new tack. Still a third tack. Though I hear from Roberta Markman anyway, doing something completely different. Anyway, there were some specific things of that sort. Tried to make some sense out of. Seemed to be a curious kind of management of the audiovisual section, but that's that. And we had a general education committee that met, and we did decide that we would limit the number of courses available for GE. We set some criteria, and then we would sort courses against such criteria. We're talking about existing courses, and there would be a recommended list for general education instead of everything counting as it had counted. That was reasonably acceptable. We got that through all right. Don had started it, and more or less carried on and fulfilled what she'd started in that respect. I never thought much of her idea, which has been implemented, of six units of GE in the upper division. I don't think much of the idea that these should all be interdisciplinary courses. I don't know whether she stood for that interdisciplinary idea as strongly as she did for getting the upper division, mainly for fiscal reasons. There were some strong arguments to be made for it as a fiscal device, because instead of having the students do all their GE at a community college, well, we have them do some of it here. And that would mean that there would be enrollment in these courses that generated resources in areas where they probably wouldn't have been generated before. GE reform, I send memos into Adamany, but he wasn't interested in pushing it in the first year. He would have supported me if I'd have gone ahead and done something, I suppose, but this wasn't his priority. And I felt that nothing but a person that held a permanent appointment that had at least 5 years that he could count on would really be in a position to see that thing through anyway, so it seemed a futile enterprise. I did have one scheme, and I still think it may have been utopian, but I'm not sure. What it was to recognize that there would be a kind of a hierarchy of requirements. There would be degree requirements, and there'd be general university requirements, which would be GE. And then there would be school and departmental or program requirements. And that you would not have the same, you would not meet the university's requirements in the same way in every school. Each school would have to design a program to broaden its students. And there would be two requirements, that it couldn't teach the program itself, that it would have to use the resources of the university outside, but that it would work with other schools and departments to create the kind of a broad program that it wanted, by way of course selection, but that they would have to meet some university criteria, but that the various schools would have some latitude in approaching this problem. And the philosophy behind this all was that if you forced on schools a program like we now have, for example, in engineering and science and other areas, there's great hostility to it. And the faculty are talking it down, everybody's talking it down, and it creates a bad situation. The students are told, well, you're going to have to go out and waste another 3 units taking a general education course by the engineers, you know? And so on. So I thought, well, if schools create programs that they believe in, then they're going to be somewhat enthusiastic about their students' involvement in these programs, and they will see them as part of the program for which they're responsible for creating professional people. And that was my way of going. I would have then, whatever my specifications would have done, they would have required certain things that now are not necessarily required. They would have required really more breadth, less having students take things that are immediately useful to their major, and really design something that is outside the major, unrelated to it, and designed to broaden the student. In other words, some people think that the appropriate history for an engineer is a history of engineering, you know. Well, I'm sure there's something to be gotten by putting the two together, and maybe you can develop a sense of history by teaching the history of engineering. But it seems to me the engineers need something else completely outside of engineering and not a history of engineering course. Well, that was the notion I had. I really wasn't as keen on interdisciplinary requirements. Not that I don't believe in them, but I believe they can only work voluntarily. You can encourage them. I don't think you can require them. You know, I don't think you can get enough genuine cooperation and team effort to create all these things. There just aren't that many happy pairs or groups of people that are willing to work together. Teaching is a very private business and very individual. Two people that can be married together to teach a course for any length of time are rare. You find a few pairs, a few things. What you should do is facilitate that, encourage it, but you can't create it. And by making a requirement which says everybody's got to do interdisciplinary work, you're going to create a lot of, you know, I don't think it's going to work. We'll see if it'll work, but I never thought it was going to work. So, I never really got much of a chance to try this idea. I talked to David Adamany about it, but he didn't seem terribly interested in it. Nobody else was terribly interested. And I could never figure out what the hell the president wanted in general education. And I don't know whether he knows. I read all his stuff. I did try to understand what he was saying. And I don't know what he's saying. There were a few specific things he thought people should have. You should know something about the law. But kind of a handbook kind of thing that solves your personal problems. No, not that. The general spirit of the law, in the broad sense. Oh, nothing practical at all, something broadening. I don't know what he wants, really, but he thinks so. They should all have a course in law somewhere. Right? And you know, there are other things like this which he has in mind, which he calls general education. So I never could figure out what he was up to. I had an interesting experience as associate vice president. I can't say that David and I